yeah, the self-criticism is important to keep you, I'm not saying to keep you grounded or to keep you focused so that, you know, you're being reflective and you're understanding the stage you're at. But at the same time, it's important to get even sometimes an objective view, like speak to your friends and speak to other people and actually get a clearer picture of what is going on. Because sometimes you can be so deep in your own head that you don't actually realize that you're doing a lot.
Welcome to the Valuable Podcast, where there is value in every conversation. I'm your host, Victor Sasanya, and today I am joined with Temi Dansel, a mechanical engineer who turned full-time artist. In this episode, we discuss how Temi has specialized in realistic portraits, grown a YouTube page to over 350k subscribers, and has joined the YouTube Black Creator Class of 2022. First things first, shout out Zencaster, who is the sponsor of this episode and season 2 of the Valuable Podcast. Zencaster is an all-in-one podcasting platform, which I've personally used from day one to record my podcast. So there's no lies told. I know this platform. I record both quality audio and HD video online using Zencaster. So if you want to start a podcast, then you can too, with 30% off your first 3 months. So go to zen.ai/valuable1 and use my promo code valuable1. Alternatively, just click the link in the description below, then apply the code valuable1. Zencaster has over 10,000 podcasters like myself in the Creator Network, and they are successfully matching brands and companies with podcasters every day. So even if you're a brand interested in sponsoring this show or running podcast ads to grow your business, go to zen.ai/valuable1 and fill out the contact information so Zencaster can help you bring your business dreams to life. Without further ado, let's get straight into this episode. I'm so excited for you to join me on the Valuable Podcast. Do you want to quickly just introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Temi and I'm an artist. I like to say formally engineer, but technically I'm still an engineer, I guess. But I'm an artist and also a content creator.
Well, and can we just quickly break it down straight away? So, because artists, like, what exactly do you do? Because, for example, when you said an artist, the first thing that comes to my mind is like a music artist, maybe because of where I come from. Is like, that's the sort of artist, like, I don't actually know a lot of full-time artists doing what you're doing. So, like, do you have a specific sort of niche or art that you create?
Yeah, and maybe I should start introducing myself as a fine artist or a visual artist, because then people will be expecting me to sing and I'm like, I don't know about that. But so I do fine art, I do portrait drawings. So I specialize mostly in color pencil drawings, and it's usually the realistic style, but I also experiment with other media as well. So my go-to are realistic portraits. But obviously there are loads of different types of art. So some people do graphics, some people do even within fine art, landscapes, still life. But yeah, I focus on people and faces really.
It's art hobby for you?
I mean, it's my full-time job now, so I guess it's gone past being a hobby, but I definitely did it over time. So I did art when I was at school and I really, really loved it at school. And then I continued. So this was like GCSE A-levels. And in GCSE, I was doing like really small pencil drawings. That's all I could do at the time. And that's all my teacher wanted me to do. So that was fine. And then I went to this A-level and it's actually, I don't want to call it a deadly school, but it was a deadly 2 years. It was crazy, because this school, they could do incredible, incredible, incredible paintings. Like from year 9, they were teaching them to do meter by meter canvases. And I was just there like getting into the school in these small drawings, and they're looking at me like, where did they find this one? But I ended up learning so much at that school, because obviously I was thrown into the deep end with paintings and it was crazy. But that's where my art journey kind of started.
Yeah. Wait, was that an art school? Was it specific to art, or was it like a normal sixth form?
No, it was a normal sixth form, like an independent. I don't remember what they called it. So it had like a boarding school that people paid for, but I just went to the normal day school. But it was just, I just say it was a high achieving school, because there was no need for their art department to be doing all of that, to be honest. But yeah, so it was just a normal sixth form.
Yeah, no, in contrast, because my sixth form, I think we had art as sixth form, but I promise you there was like 3 or 4 students in the year.
and I thought that was more than that.
No, I'm actually telling you, because I remember one of my friends in the year above, so he was complaining about, as in there was literally 4, or make it max 10. There's no way there was more than 10 students in that class. And because one of my friends now, he's actually in like in America, and he does lots of, so that's why I asked what type of art do you do, because he does painting. I mean, my art skills are not that advanced, but he does a lot of, like, I think painting, a bit of oil painting, and different sort of type of art. But for him, it was a thing, like, it was definitely not the school per se that fostered him in that sort of art journey. So I was just curious for yourself, like, so you mentioned that school was what sort of propelled you, would you say pushed you to really hone in on your art skills?
I think they really propelled me into colour, because like I mentioned, I was only doing graphite detailed drawings before that. So it really threw me in the deep end. But in terms of the actual art that I do now, it was all like kind of fostered from things that I did in my free time. And because I don't even do paintings now, so it's all things that I've just kind of, like, that's why I say I'm a self-taught artist, because I don't think what I learned from when I was 16, 17, 18 is really impacting the art that I'm doing now, you know?
Okay, so this is more so of you just practicing and teaching yourself, would you say?
No, 100%, 100%, because the art that I was doing then was not palatable. It was not really, it was okay, but it's changed a lot in recent years, I would say.
Yeah, and the fact that you've become full-time, and I saw that you actually made the YouTube Creator Class of 2022, and I think, you know, congratulations, that's so amazing as well. But for people that don't know what that is, could you explain sort of what the YouTube Creator Class is and how exactly did you get onto it?
Thank you. So it's called the YouTube Black Voices Fund. That's what kind of funds it. And I think it was put together by YouTube just to create some budget and some resources for Black people on YouTube, basically. So they have classes. So I'm part of the UK class. They've got different African countries. I think they've got the US as well. And then they've also got like an artist, like music artist side as well, I think. But anyway, so the fund for me is literally just an opportunity for me to get direct support from YouTube, which is incredible. So they have actual seed funding. So they actually financially have supported me, but also I've got a partner manager that I can speak to. So my next steps of YouTube, she gives me so much support. So for example, I really want to do more live streaming this year. And she got me with this live stream consultant that works in YouTube to go through so much stuff to help me, literally direct support, which is amazing. And then the network as well. So we have classes regularly. So it's almost like a school year, like they've got the different trimesters, they call it. And you have the knowledge, you know, that's being shared. And then you also have talks, you have the networking with your fellow students. It's an incredible community to be a part of, and how I actually got involved. So I don't remember how I found it, but I found it and I applied and I got in, basically.
No, that's amazing. And just for context, in case people don't know, so Temi has a phenomenal art page on YouTube, I think with 330k subscribers around.
Something like that.
humbly. By the time you're probably listening to this, it'll probably be much more. But yeah, and I actually watched a couple of your videos, and because me myself, like, just looking at the content, not that I want to be an artist, and I think I told you this offline, sort of art for me didn't really work out in secondary school. So but just looking at some of the drawings you do is absolutely amazing, and the growth that you've had on your YouTube page. So you were on like around 50k subscribers last year, right?
Yeah, I think I hit 50k around August last year,
and we're not even near August currently, so that's like 300,000 subscribers and just, you know, just under a year. And I think that's so phenomenal. And I saw your face in LA billboards, etc. So like, did you ever think like 5 years ago this is where you'll be now?
No, to be honest, for me and art, I wasn't thinking about having this great YouTube career, basically. So I definitely did not imagine this. I think 5 years ago, I'd probably would have been imagining working in engineering because I was in an engineering degree. So definitely not.
Okay, so your background's actually from engineering?
Yes.
Okay, so talk to me a bit about how you came to study engineering and transition into art. Like, if you mentioned that you were doing art in sixth form, so how comes you didn't just go straight into, I don't know, art school or something like that? Why did you take the engineering route?
Yeah, good question. So my other A-level subjects were maths and physics. So I really loved maths and physics, and art was just like the creative one on the side. And in terms of how I got into engineering, I think it's pretty easy when you have that maths and physics background to just be encouraged in that direction. So at the time I was also considering architecture, but it was something like 7 years to do something. And then, so I just left that one in the side. And actually I went for a university open day. That's what encouraged me. I went for the mechanical engineering course, like the course overview they had, and the architecture one and the engineering one just appealed to me a lot more. So that's how I ended up in engineering. And actually I never considered studying art. It was just something that I did, like I enjoyed it at school, but to me that was the end of it, really.
No, so engineering was more so like the career that you're going down in terms of getting employment and income, etc.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was because of a lack of exposure at the time, but I didn't think for a second, oh yeah, art is an option. Like it was just, yeah, engineering. I don't know why.
For me, when I think about art and artists, I feel like there's sort of just two sides. You're either very much a student who's just doing art as a subject and you're not really that good, or you're at the very top, you know, with the Picassos, etc., etc. Like I don't really see the middle in between of people making full-time living, and maybe that's just sort of my exposure. So did you have anyone you looked up to at the time in sixth form or during university?
No, not at all. And that's probably why I didn't really see a future in art. I really didn't consider it. My parents are both accountants, but my dad actually studied engineering. So for me, it wasn't like a, oh yeah, let me just go and do something creative. I think, to be honest, before it started making money, it was very much a hobby. Yeah, you like to do that in your free time. Congratulations. But what are you actually going to do? Kind of.
Yeah. Like. Okay. So what was the actual transition like? How did you actually go full time into art? Did you just sit down and thought, there's a bit of money here. The money can sustain me. Don't really want to be doing engineering now. Was it like a decision, or was it sort of just, let me just try to do this full time? Like I'm done with my other job.
Yeah, no, it was 100% a decision. And I always say that it was the one time in my life where I actively made a decision in one direction as opposed to the other. So for example, going through school, it was just do your subjects, then do engineering, then go into this job. But this was the one time that I was like, ooh, actually, I need to make a decision that's a bit contrary to that. But to answer your question, I think the transition to full time, it was more like, I don't have the time anymore. I didn't have time to balance what ended up feeling like two full-time jobs. So having my corporate job and having my art, YouTube, anything else that I was doing, and actually having the time for my friends and family. And what happened was after COVID, so COVID happened. So actually, background on my channel, I uploaded my first video 11 years ago. At the time, I had an art blog. So I would just post pictures of the process of the drawings that I was doing on my art blog. And I thought, oh, I want to put this on YouTube as well and do some like speed drawing. So I started uploading it onto YouTube, but I really did it very sporadically for a few years and barely did it while I was at uni. But when I left uni, I knew that, okay, I actually want to actively upload and act. Basically, I wanted to be consistent. And I left uni in 2019. So in 2020, I said, it's my year of consistency. I'm going to be consistent every day. And I uploaded videos very often. But anyway, so COVID happened, and because of COVID and working from home, it was a lot easier for me to manage creating consistent content and actually working on my corporate job on the side. But when stuff started opening back up, and it was now like, oh, I need to physically visit friends, or I need to participate in any other thing that I do, it was impossible for me to balance my engineering job and my art career. And I think it was literally last year that I finished my grad scheme and I decided that I need to decide what I want to do, basically. And art was becoming very lucrative. There were months where it was matching, doubling my actual salary, that I was like, what business do I have in the salary job? And that's where my actual passion is as well. So
yeah,
you know, it was at that point, it was a very easy decision. But, and even if it fluctuates, obviously, but I just saw so much potential there, because I think with the online space, it's exponential in the growth and revenue streams. So like I was at the cusp of what felt like a lot of potential. So it was like, why would I die trying to keep both when I can actually go all in on the art? So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, again, like, I didn't think art was a thing that you can monetize off so easily, but I actually was watching one of your videos and you talked about monetization. I think you talked about the 7 different ways you can monetize, and you mentioned, like, you can do physical products, digital products, online courses, YouTube, AdSense, sponsorship, and even crowdfunding. And I'm sure there's much more. So, like, what is it for you? Do you sort of use all those different monetization tools, or do you have one that sort of sustains you on your journey so far?
Yeah, good question. I think monetization is, like, the potential of it is great, and especially when you have an audience. So I actually focused on building an audience rather than trying to throw products or services at them. So that was my focus for the first 2 years, and now I'm in the third year of doing my YouTube. But in terms of how I monetize at the moment, the main ways are YouTube AdSense, which are the ads on my videos that people skip or don't skip. It's fine. And also affiliate marketing. So affiliate marketing is when you have a link to something. So let's say I use some coloring pencils in my video, I'll put a link to it in the description. And if it's an affiliate link and you buy from my link, then I get literally pennies off of that. So that works really well in some spaces. But for something like, I think, like, in the tech space, it works really well, because if you're buying computers, then, you know, 1%, 10% is a lot. In my space, not as well, but it's still, you know, an income source. And then I sometimes have sponsored content. So brands will pay me to mention their product in the video, and that's usually great. Alongside sponsorships are, like, also kind of brand collaborations. So a lot of art brands would give you, they will gift you products. So they will gift you, I don't know, another color and pencil set. And I'm like, okay. But in that sense, is they just want you to use their product, maybe make a review. It's like, sometimes it is an income source, because sometimes you get paid, but usually no, to be honest. But there are other ways that I want to do. So in the future, I want to go into digital products. So I don't do physical products anymore. And a physical product for me would have been, like, commissions or prints of my work. It's something that I want to do in the future. Digital products is another thing that I want to do in the future. I'm an avid planner. I used to have a lot of bullet journal content on my channel. I do digital planning at the moment on my iPad. So I think some digital products in that aspect will be good. And in the future as well, I really want to start a Patreon. And for people that don't know, it's a crowdfunding kind of page where you can support your favorite creators with more exclusive content. And you pay or you pledge. It's like a monthly recurring revenue source. And the good thing about Patreon, like, some artists are getting money, like thousands on there, and it really is just from support from your audience. The good thing about it is that it's a recurring revenue source. So on the months where YouTube AdSense might dry up, on the months where you don't have sponsored content, at least you have that recurring thing happening. And actually, so I'm launching my Patreon 1st of April, so it's something that I haven't done yet, but it's coming in the near future.
And I think there's one thing that you mentioned that was sort of crucial, because you mentioned, like, so sponsors, etc., can give you, like, coloring pencils and this and that, but, like, being an artist, how much does it sort of cost per se? Because you talked a bit about the money, how much you can get from it, but what does it actually cost to be an artist? Is it more so your time drawing? Is it creative thinking? Or is it sort of the pen, like, are you buying coloring pencils from Wilco? Like, where do you get sort of the tools you need to create some of these masterpieces?
Yeah, so I think being an artist is quite expensive, to be honest. I remember when I first bought my favorite set of coloring pencils, which sounds nerdy, but that cost like 300 and something pounds, and people were looking at me like, why are you spending 300 pounds on pencils? But they've lasted me for years and years and years, and they're just amazing. But I think the majority of the cost comes from time. My pieces take hours and hours and hours to complete, and even then, imagine you've invested all that time into it and you're not even happy with the piece, you know. But yeah, I think most of it is time, and some of it is the actual cost of materials, because they're also perishable materials. So after you use that paint, you can't squeeze it back up and put it back in the tube. Like, the paint is gone. So
yeah. And yeah, has there been a point where you've actually done that, where you created art, you looked at it, I don't really like this, like, what happens after that?
What can happen? You go again. Definitely. And actually, I That's why I stopped being a perfectionist with my art, because at the end of the day, there's no pressure. If I don't like it, I go again tomorrow. And I really encourage that on my channel. And, you know, anytime I feel like something isn't going quite well, it's not a mistake, it's a learning curve. Next time I know not to mix colors this way or whatever else. So to me, it's not by force. It's not like I'm selling it to anyone to, you know, feel shame around it. It is, I feel like every piece is just practice, to be honest.
Yeah, and you talk about practice, and you said that you don't do commissions anymore. And I think one of the sort of reasons you mentioned before was that you felt like you were a bit undervalued and also underappreciated. So First of all, in case nobody knows what commissions are, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it when a client of, let's say I wanted a drawing of my family, so I come to you and I ask, hey, can you draw a portrait of me and my family, and then you sort of give me a price, or we talk about what we sort of want. So I thought that would be the typical way that artists sort of not only make money, because it's not always about money, but sort of how you actually provide value. So you've got such a niche skill and craft that not everyone can replicate, and you literally just said you had a lot of practice in it. So how comes that you've just stopped that service and just put a halt to it?
I literally made a video about this, why I hate commissions. Commissions, in my opinion, are just, it's just the worst way to spend your time as an artist. So I will say it's great for practice. It's great to be able to give someone something that they'll really cherish. Obviously, people love personalized gifts, and, you know, people get really emotional when they see their pet being drawn, their partner, whoever. And so commissions are great for that. But commissions, realistically for me, it just wasn't making sense in terms of the time it was taking. You're putting so much time into just one piece for one person, and commissions can never be scalable if you're doing it by yourself, because you're always going to invest a lot of time into it. But also the actual customers, so people give you the blurriest photos, something that you can't really produce anything from, and they're expecting a masterpiece, and it's just not it. So the quality of photos people provide, sometimes the time that it takes, and the gratitude of people. So you mentioned about the
felt like you're underappreciated.
Yeah, like there was one person that just, she insulted me, really. She was just like, "Why did I even come to you?" And I was just like, "You gave me the blurriest photo." Like, there's definitely, I would just say the anxiety that comes with it, because if I'm doing a normal piece for myself, if I don't like the piece, that's fine. Full stop. If I'm doing a piece for someone, so if I did a piece for you and your family and your dad is there, "Why did you draw me like that? What can I do? Am I going to start again?" So, you know, having to have external validation for everything that you're doing as an artist, it's not it.
And it's quite interesting. So do you not thrive off that sort of validation or that appreciation from people saying, I don't know, like I always tell you, like I love your drawing, I think you're very skilled, because you sort of mentioned on one of your YouTube videos that when people say that, you feel like they overlook the process in terms of how much time you've actually spent on your craft, on your work. It's interesting. So I read a paper, well, I didn't read all of it, but there's a paper, it's like some old paper in 1993, but it talks about basically this law, this rule of how to become an expert. And I'll link, if you're listening, I'll link it into the newsletter so you can read it properly. But it talks about, I'm sure you've heard of it, this 10,000 hours that you need to put in to become an expert. Now, this was actually done by, what's his name? I forgot the person's name, but a guy, and he wrote this in 1993, but the idea never really surfaced or became popular until there was a book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers. And he really talks about the key to success, how you see, like, I don't know, your Cristiano Ronaldo's or your Bill Gates, sort of is the hours that they put in. So for you, do you think that's the same case for you? Is it a case that you've put in 10,000 hours? Like, how much time? Because if you released your first ever, what was it, blog post or YouTube video 11 years ago, surely there must be a story. Like, do you think you've done those 10,000 hours?
100%, maybe even more. Because if you think about, each art piece is going to take whatever amount of time, and then I've produced how many different art pieces? So 100%.
Do you feel like every time you draw another art piece, you're sort of getting better? Or is it, like, what I'm trying to say, is it a linear sort of progress, or is it exponential? Was there a point in time where it clicked, you've got this, this is what, like, you're good at, and this is how you're going to improve your work going forward?
Yeah, I think it clicked when I was in year nine, because that's when I did my first portrait that I was like, oh, this is actually nice. Because, you know, every other time people are like, yeah, it's nice. But it was the first time that I actually saw the value in what I was creating in terms of my skill level. But I wouldn't say it's linear. I think it just goes up, feels stagnant for a bit, goes up. Like, I feel like it's kind of zigzag. And also, it depends on how you feel about the work as well. So I say in retrospect, there's some pieces that I look at and I'm like, oh, I did something here, but at the time, I don't think I was necessarily feeling like that. But to answer your question, I would say it's thousands of hours that go into each one. And I don't think you have to improve with each piece, because you can be challenging different things with each piece. And it doesn't have to be, the next one has to be better, because you could, there's some ways that I like to practice with limiting the colors I use, or trying to use a lot of colors. So it doesn't, actually it's not boring and like, oh, I'm just going to keep drawing until I reach mastery. For me, I'm not chasing hyperrealism. So hyperrealism is trying to find or capture every single detail. So mm-hmm. every single pore and, you know, every speckle in the eye. I'm not doing that. I'm just trying to depict what I see. So I say I do photorealism. So I still inject my personality into it a little bit. So it still looks like somebody. It's still going to look like the person, but I might play around with the colors or how I actually capture it. I'm not chasing perfection with the art at all.
You're not chasing perfection, but you sort of just built those hours over time and working and developing sort of your craft. And so what does it take? What does that actually look like practically? Is it actually you just, you're scheduling 3 hours a day to draw, to paint? Does that even include sort of watching other people at their craft? Because I know for me personally, yes, I don't do art, but when it comes to sort of public speaking, or when it comes to something that I want to do, I'll actually spend a lot of hours studying before I do that. So this is a prime example. Before I made this podcast, I spent hours checking how to make a podcast or what, like, I listened to a few other podcasts, not many, but that's part of my hours, if that makes sense. Like, part of my hours is studying the game, like who's doing what works well, what don't work well, why are they doing it like that? Because that's just how I think and operate with sort of like everything in life. So was that the case for you as well?
Yes, and I'm actually very much the same. So before I did my YouTube or my TikTok or even Patreon that I'm launching soon, a lot of research goes into it. What are other people doing? How can I bring my own, you know, flair into this space? So yeah, I definitely do that. You can get inspiration from all over. So personally, I follow a lot of artists and I watch a lot of artists' videos and their process. And I think that really helps. But something I speak about on my channel a lot is about intentional practice, because you can consume and you can watch from now till next year. But until you put your own pencil to paper, until you put your own paintbrush to paint to canvas, then you can't actually produce anything. So yeah, I think it's important to consume and see what other people are doing, but at the same time it's also important to actually practice. And by intentional practice, I mean focus on what you want to improve on. So my proportions aren't making sense. Okay, let me do some practice exercises for proportions. So proportions are basically making sure everything is placed in the right place. So if I'm drawing my face, I need to make sure the eyes are here. If it's slightly out, it's not going to look like me. So proportions is just making sure that things, it's probably the most strict part of art, where if you're trying to go for a realistic style, it needs to be in the right place. But I didn't even need to go into that, because if you want to improve anything, you just need to actually practice what you're trying to improve.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. So it's simple, practice makes perfect. And I feel like it's that practice. But I feel like for most of us in a generation where there's so many things to do, there's actually so many things to do. So how do we schedule our time to get that 10,000 hours? Because honestly, it feels ridiculous. Who's going to spend the next 10,000 hours practicing on something and it doesn't work out?
So the first thing I want to say is, I don't believe in practice makes perfect with art. I believe in practice makes progress, because I don't like to chase perfection with art. I feel like that puts an unrealistic pressure on what you are creating, and that actually stifles some people from creating at all, because if it doesn't end up being perfect, then, you know, what's the point? Yeah. But with the journey, I feel like the journey is the best bit, because with art, I don't think you can get to level 1000, oh, I've achieved it all, I've conquered it all. There's always something to learn. And so the art that I'm creating at my age now, or the art I was creating 3 years ago, is very reflective of my life 3 years ago. But in 10 years, the art I'll be creating can be completely different. But one doesn't need to be better than the other. But for me, I'm very much a planner, and I definitely had to schedule some time. With art, it's always weird because you can't always force yourself to create art. Some of it comes with actually feeling the motivation or feeling inspired to be able to create. But sometimes you have to be strict and you just have to be like, I'm going to sit down for an hour a day. So for example, when I was at university, I did not have the time alongside my mechanical engineering degree to ever do art. But I had to schedule, even if it was just once a month or whenever, do a little bit of this drawing. And I think because I was recording my process for the internet, so I, at the time, I was just posting progress pictures on my Instagram, that kind of inspired me to, okay, I need to get back onto this so that I can share the next step. And that kind of comes with building a community, because the community then wants to see that from you or expects it from you, or you just feel inspired to share it. And that helped me to actually make time for it. It's not easy, especially when I think you mentioned there are a billion other things that you literally could be doing, and it takes so long, but it's 100% rewarding. Yes.
Yeah. And have you ever been approached to make art for an NFT?
I knew you were going to go there.
Because it's like with NFTs, yes, they're so popular. Yes, they're so rewarding. But at the end of the day, you need an artist to actually create something. And I feel like it's such a lucrative field right now, and I'm seeing like even some of the NFTs that are being made, I'm thinking, wow, like this is whoever drew or made this is amazing. I'm not thinking about the money behind it, I'm just thinking about that, what the actual NFT represents. So is this something you've ever been approached?
I have not been approached about creating an NFT, but it's something I've considered. So I've had friends and family mention, oh, have you considered this? And NFTs are a bit of a touchy subject with actual artists. Traditionally, or let's just say some artists are actually against NFTs. Some of it comes down to, it's almost like, you know, when you see that canvas that is just red paint in the middle and it's sold for $300,000. It's that whole thing of almost rich people just trying to change money. So it's like celebs can easily make loads from an NFT, but an actual traditional artist, not necessarily. So it's like, if you're well known already, or, you know, some niche cases, then you can, but it doesn't seem that lucrative for like an everyday artist. But also, I don't know if you know about the environmental impacts of NFTs, very bad for the environment. And some people, I mean, people, I care about the environment, but because of the blockchain and how much energy they use, it's actually, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, there's definitely been a lot of concerns, even with the computers that mine these cryptocurrencies, like Ethereum, where the blockchain runs on. Yeah, of course. I think it's one of those things. Many people actually don't think about that. So it's good that you are, like, in terms of, you're not just here to sell your art for a quick check, if that makes sense, or quick transfer, bank transfer. Like, you're actually caring about, one, if you made that same art, would you make as much sales, etc.? Would they value you as an artist? Or is it just because there's a celebrity name behind the project, if that makes sense?
Yeah, exactly. And I think people sometimes just fall to trends and, oh, what's the next big thing? And to be honest, it's fair, because gone are the days of you have to be a starving artist or you have to be dead to eat from your art. So I definitely recognize with people that are like, okay, you know what, I actually want to make something. But for me personally, NFTs are not something that I'm considering at the moment. But never say never. I don't know, in a few years I'll be there. But yeah, not currently.
No, of course. And I always wondered, like, with everything you do, from the drawing to the managing the YouTube page, posting content, create content, is it just you? Like, are you a one woman bandwagon? Do you have a team behind the scenes, like, working?
If only. Yeah, it's just me at the moment. I'm definitely looking to hire very soon. So I'm looking for editors. I'm already in the process of doing that. But at the moment, edit all my content, create everything, and yeah.
Okay, so what's the process like? Even if someone wanted to make a YouTube channel, or should I say even grow a YouTube channel, because there's a lot behind what you do. Like, for example, some of your thumbnails, I just want to click. So is there a lot of thought process into that? Editing the videos, like you just said, filming the videos. What does it take to run a successful YouTube channel?
So day to day for me with YouTube, it's all about creating the actual content that my audience wants to see. So some days it's filming for hours and hours, because I'll be filming the face part where I'm, you know, speaking to the camera or whatever I'm doing. And then the actual art part of creating the piece, if it's a challenge using crayons or whatever, then I'm creating that, or a tutorial sometimes. And then at the editing stage, then I'm putting the voiceover, the music, everything else to actually help to tell this story. So that's the basic YouTube production process. And for growing a channel, for me, I can just speak about my experience. I think it's different for different people. For me, I started by, like I said, back 11 years ago, I was just doing speed drawing videos. And then I started doing more tutorials and actually showing that, because what I find with artists is some people follow them because they think they're interesting. They think the art they create is nice. But a lot of an artist's audience is actually other artists that want to improve their own skills. So, or maybe stay motivated. So in that sense, I found that tutorials, I was being asked a lot for tutorials, like, how are you doing what you're doing? And even if I was showing the speed drawing, people still wanted to really hear what was going on. So yeah, I started doing tutorials on my channel. And then I started a series that I called the Temi's Tirades, where I would just be ranting about something or the other. And I think people love listening to things that they can relate to sometimes, or just things that they just want to hear the insights of an artist. So I remember when I made my Why I No Longer Do Commissions video, and I shared it with a few of my friends, and they were like, oh, I've never thought about it from that perspective, because to them it's just, oh yeah, of course, you just draw for someone. So the Temi's Tirades really propelled my channel, because people then really saw the face behind the art, where before it was just my hands that you could see. Now they could actually see who they were speaking with, and they stayed for not just the art, but then the personality and, okay, what's she going to talk about next? So yeah, for me, that really helped to boost my channel. And then I started doing more art challenge videos, like trying to create art with crayons, trying to create art with a medium I've not used in 10 years, oil paints. Yeah, and that's what really kept my channel exciting. But in terms of growing a channel, I think it's about focusing on the value add. So what is your audience here for? I see some channels that will grow maybe based off of like a few viral videos, and it might not be something they necessarily want to do, like past that. So it might be like, let's say, a few tech videos or a few what's on my iPhone videos, and then all of a sudden they're like, actually I want to do beauty, and then they start uploading beauty. But people came here for what's on your iPhone, so that's what we want to see. So in that sense, you want to focus on the value that you're bringing and also fulfilling what your audience actually wants. They are very vocal in the comments, so literally just listening to them. But of course, when it aligns to what you also want to do, that's almost the sweet spot. But yeah, creating value for them, and just, I think, upgrading your quality. So focusing on what you can control rather than thinking, oh, I want to grow to a certain amount. Focus on consistency, uploading one video every week, one video every 2 weeks, whatever you can manage, and just making sure each video is 1% better than the last one. And in the end, you're just going to create a consistent library. And how I like to think of it as well is, I want people to come to my channel and see a good library of things. Like, I would hate for someone to find me when I'm still finding my feet with even creating good videos. And there's some of my old videos that have over 1 million views, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, why? Like, because there's so much I would change, but I had to do those videos to then get to the point that I'm at now. So just focus on creating better videos, I think actually helps with the growth.
That's good. You see what you just said there? Process. It's part of the process. And I feel like so many people want to actually discount that process or get rid of it, because you actually mentioned something that was very, very key, and it's pondered on my mind so much. You said that some artists just have a few viral videos, and yeah, that's just it. That's what brings followers to their page, but like, it cannot be consistent. And for me, that's something that I've been thinking about as well, because so many people have actually, when I say, oh, who should I get next on the podcast, right, they've recommended some guests, right? And for me personally, I've just felt like I'm still going through the process. That, like, I can't just create a podcast as, I'm not saying I'm a nobody, but I can't just get on here and get a next celebrity just to calm down, because what's going to happen is that celebrity or that person who's put in those hours, they've put in those years to build their following, they will come, the episode might go viral, then people will leave with them. Does that make sense to go follow them? And no one will stay for me. And it's not even from a selfish or prideful aspect, it's just sort of like going through the process. And that's why I wanted to touch on it. So you actually have videos where, yes, they've even done good, but it was part of the process, it was part of your posting, and you enormously grew that YouTube channel up to the point where 330k 40k, that basically thousands, hundred thousands. We're seeing a lot of numbers. Thousands and thousands. And No, I think it's so good. And I think you also, you also mentioned, what was it? The thing you said at the very end, 1% better every day. And I just wonder, the woman behind the art, like, do you work on yourself getting 1% better every day? So we're not talking about the art, we're talking about the actual self-development, because it must be, you know, art, as much as you love it, there must be times you might be frustrated. Like, have you grown as an individual?
Yes, I definitely do. And I think I'm probably harder on myself than I need to be. But that's a philosophy that I take into every aspect of my life. Like, I'm a very strict goal setter, and I do it for the different aspects. And I think with self-development, it's always a hard one, especially because art is just so much of what I do. So it feels like it overwhelms me. But at the same time, with my personal relationships with people, it's like there's just so many different aspects that go beyond the art, or like the art doesn't even like come into play. But yeah, it's something that I try to do with everything. And I'm so self-critical. That's the thing. Oh, sorry, we don't need to go there.
How do you deal with it though, if you're so self-critical? Like, is that something that you're still sort of working on to give yourself some leeway, or do you think it's needed to strive for that mastery?
I'm definitely working on it and giving myself more grace. But the reality is, especially with comparison, so I try not to compare myself. I also sometimes don't see the value of what I am doing or what I have done. And I just think of, you know, someone else that might have it better. But the self-criticism is important to keep you, I want to say to keep you grounded or to keep you focused, so that, you know, you're being reflective and you're understanding the stage you're at. But at the same time, it's important to get even sometimes an objective view, like speak to your friends and speak to other people and actually get a clearer picture of what is going on. Because sometimes you can be so deep in your own head that you don't actually realize that you're doing a lot. But yeah. Sometimes you're so deep in your own head that you don't realize how much you're actually doing. So
yeah. Is there anybody who you look up to or that's really influenced you in your journey so far?
Yeah, so there are a few different people with art. For actual artists, there's an artist called Kelvin Okafor. He's a Nigerian artist and he does hyper realistic work, so very detailed pencil drawings. And so I mentioned that I started a blog 11 years ago. So I started a blog because I saw his blog and I wanted to also share my art. So he is someone that still inspires me till today. Amazing, incredible artist. You have to check out his work. And another artist is Heather Rooney. So she actually did color pencil drawings, and she's the one that inspired me into color, because I didn't really like painting, but I wanted to start using color and I wasn't really sure how to. And I think coloring pencils is that perfect mix where you have the control of the pencil, but you're also able to create amazing painterly work. So those were the main two. And for YouTube, another artist called 1000, so his real name is Peter, and he creates incredible videos. And for me, like, I just really want to do an amalgamation of the three, where I'm able to tell amazing stories in my videos, but also create incredible, also create really good artwork as well. So yeah,
I would be checking them out. And also, if you're listening, I'll also link them into the newsletter. And if you're not subscribed, you can subscribe at www.valuablepodcast.com, where we summarize just all the value that you hear in written form. So those of you who don't want to listen again, or you might want to share with a friend who's an avid sort of reader, then they can do that as well. But Temi, I mean, I think, yeah, I've learned a lot from you. Definitely a character, personality, and I feel like, yeah, you've just been very sort of real with what you do. So where can they sort of reach you, find you, support you and see your amazing work?
So the best place to find me is YouTube. My channel is Temi Danso Art, and I just show the process behind my art and occasional rants and all of the rest. But I also have an Instagram, which is Temi_Danso, TikTok, the same. And yeah, those are my active social media pages.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to give it a 5-star rating and leave a review. Alternatively, you can send us a DM on Instagram at Valuable Podcast and sign up to our newsletter at valuablepodcast.com. Remember, increase the value you provide and you'll rise in due time.